Good overview of what a UUCP package is and what it can do, and then help you decide if it's what you need. So the first module is UUCICO, which stands simply for Unix to Unix, copy in, copy out. I should have faked it and called it UMCO or CICO for Unix to MS-DOS, but I tried to stay as close to Unix, which is a registered trademark of Unix Laboratories, as I could. Now that I got that out of the way. What UUCICO does is it will establish a connection with the remote host via the modem, log in, and transfer the information back and forth. That's it in a nutshell. To get a little more specific, you have a script in a systems file which names all the sites that you want to talk to and actually how to log in. You specify the maximum baud rate, the COM port to use. Normally you'd specify which protocol to use under Unix, but since this is DOS, it speaks the G protocol. And then you give it a script of strings to look for in a expect send format, and you can have any number of them. And what you'd normally do is you'd say, look for OGIN colon, send whatever the login name is. So for me, I would look for OGIN colon, send FUBARSYS. After the send, a return is implied. It will automatically send a return. There's an option to tell it not to. Nobody's ever used it. I don't know why you'd have to, but it's there. And then afterwards, I would tell it look for SSWORD colon, and then send my password, which should then theoretically connect me to the remote host. The reason that I look for OGIN and not LOGIN is some Unix hosts might capitalize the L. Some will keep it lowercase. It is case sensitive. So that's why I would look for just the OGIN colon. An actual script that I use gets a lot more complicated because I have to go through some terminal servers. I actually look for an OLY, which is the end of a string that says Cal Poly, which is the site I connect to. And then I have to send the terminal a command to say, go into data mode. I look for another OLY. I tell it do hardware handshaking. Finally get to the login and password and in. This is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do, setting up a UUCP feed. If the remote host you're talking to sends you a login prompt as soon as you connect, consider yourself very lucky, because then you've just got the login and password to look for, and you're in. That's the easy part. If you have to go through terminal servers, if you have to go through PSI, that's sometimes difficult because they've got a number of terminal servers. Luckily, they give you a script to use ahead of time.
Chris, these are VBS guys. They know how to use passwords.
That's true. That's true. Who invited you? Oh, that's right, I did, I forgot. Once the connection is established, UUCICO will start the protocol. From there on in, you do nothing except watch. And there's always something to watch. I write what I call paranoid software. If the screen ever isn't doing anything, something's wrong. You will see the byte count spiraling. You will see the packet spiraling. There is always something on the screen to watch. The reason I write paranoid software is because this is a very paranoid application. Things can go wrong, incredibly. People always say that UUCP is difficult to do under Unix. It's even more difficult to do under DOS. So while the thing is running, you will see the packet counts go by, you'll see the packet types, all kinds of information that you don't even care about, probably. You'll get to watch that go by. I'll take this as my first time to plug an excellent book, Managing UUCP in Usenet by O'Reilly and Associates. Don't leave home without it. Don't attempt to run this without it if you've never used UUCP. To give you an idea of what it's like, O'Reilly and Associates puts a picture of an animal on the front of every book, and it's the animal that gives the most feeling for the package. For this book, they chose a bear, and it kind of it makes sense. What UUCICO will do while it's transferring is it will start out in master mode. Whoever makes the call is the master. Whoever accepts the call is the slave, or if you're British, the servant. We get into arguments about what it should be, but it's slave historically. The master will start sending files to the slave. It'll say, here's this file, here's that file. Slave has the option of saying, I don't want it, and there are a number of different ways that it can work. The slave can say, I don't want it now, try sending it later, I don't want it at all. These are all internal and transparent to the user. You don't really need to worry about them. But you should learn it if you're going to be running UUCP, mainly because it's fascinating. They thought this all up in the 70s, and people still use it now. After you send all of your stuff, it will turn around. The master will say, I'm going to hang up now. The slave will say, no, I don't want you to hang up now. I've got stuff. And they'll swap roles. So it's equal opportunity protocol. And then the other side becomes the master and will send files. And it will do the same thing over and over again until both of them agree, I've got nothing to send. 9 times out of 10, it'll just be one time through both ways. Sometimes if something queues up on the remote site while you were sending, it might trigger another turnaround. It's kind of rare, but it happens, and it's taken into account. What I'd like to do is answer any questions one at a time on each application. Right, and go through.
First of all, do you have a number for routing associates?
A phone number is in the documentation. And I could pull it up afterwards and give it to you if you want it.
Most technical bookstores.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yes.
Do you have your own software here that we can buy and purchase in order to do this?
Yeah, I'll talk about availability afterwards. Any questions about the actual transport?
Not exactly that. Which IRQs do you accept?
Which IRQs? It'll accept standard for COM 1 through 4. No, only because I'm using a standard library. I'm using the Greenleaf Comlib to do this. It's very simple to tell it COM 1 through 4. Anything more than that, you have to load a special driver for the different types of cards. I didn't want to get too complicated and expand the size of this thing by leaps and bounds to include a driver for each different card. It's very rare that someone wants to go above COM 4. If you really need to, we can talk, but... Yeah, it will support Fossil or its own internal driver. In the configuration, you can specify which one you want it to use. So if you, yeah, that's true. If you have a Fossil driver running on a different COM port, you can tell it Fossil, and that'll work.
Maybe I don't understand what's going on here, but you're saying that the only thing you have to do in the script is set up the log on, and then from there on out...
To begin with, that's just to get it to transfer.
What's it going to transfer on?
It's going to transfer mail and news. This I'm assuming.
How does it know? Oh, you're assuming that you have something set up there that is telling it what news groups you want to get.
Right. I'm assuming that you've already talked to a remote system administrator and told them what you want, and I'll tell you how to figure out what you want in the other applications that deal with those other pieces. This is just for the transport mechanism itself.
Some of the last sessions that you used, the ICO, is the Robocom, the Unix port.
Yes.
What's Robocom?
I went through a little bit of this, and there is a couple of things that came up to me in the Unix world more than a little bit.
A testimonial.
I use the product. How many of you run FidoNet mail or filing mail? You know what Fatally Term is? It's the mailer that does the dialing and the events. UKiKo is that for accessing Unix host. It will take files out of a directory and send them. It'll take files to you and put them in a directory. He's got some other programs that'll do some other things to that. That's what UKiKo does. The other thing that caused me a lot of confusion was the systems file in this script. It's just to get past the little gateway. After that, a protocol takes over and does a lot more things than we think of a protocol. The script is just to get past a couple of screen items. Once you're in this G protocol.
Yeah. Normally when you log into a BBS or a Unix machine, you don't think about it. You see login, you type your login name. That's what the script is for, is to teach you UCICO how to do that for you.
And it's one line. It'll take you a couple hours to get it right.
Unless you get lucky. Some people get lucky and get it right the first time.
And some hosts give you one.
Great.
It doesn't help.
Yes.
Right. On 14.4 modem, V32 bits, V42 bits, what kind of transfer rates do you want?
I can't tell you on a 14.4 only because my feed hasn't moved up to 14.4 yet, and I'm kicking their butts to do it. I use V32 on a 9600 BPS connection depending upon the load on the machine, and it's very dependent on the load on the Unix machine. I will get anywhere between, say, 500 CPS on a really bad day when the machine is loaded down. The peak that I've recorded was about 830 CPS. I could go into more detail about the protocol and put you all to sleep. I'll suffice to say it was built in the 70s. It uses 64-byte packets, and it must acknowledge each and every packet. It's the least common denominator of all the protocols. This makes Xmodem look nice. Yes?
Is there any software like this that would support TCP IP instead of UUCP?
Not yet, although version 1.4, I'm working on slip drivers for SMTP and NMTP. Those are basically direct connect with slip to do the mail and the news.
Chris, I assume you built this with a tools approach as it was built originally. So if someone has TCP IP and can arrange for a news batch to show up on their machine, they can then run your other tools that you no doubt have to tell us about on that news batch.
Assuming, of course, that it puts the files away in the file format standard that I use, they would have to mung the files in some way to get them to sit on DOS properly. So if they mung them my way, yes, it will work. And my standard is published. Tim Pozar and I fleshed it out at last year's FIDOCon, and we've published the standard. So if anybody wants to use it, that's great, and they can use my routines to do it. Jack's program, PIMP, uses my UUC ICO to bring the stuff in, and that's it. His PIMP program, which speaks the language of the file formats, will then go out and grab them and play with them.
If I had a compressed news batch, a standard sort of news batch that you would get by talking to the machine, I receive it anyway through Zmodem, through any other method I have, I could then send that to your tools with no change, and you should be able to handle it, right?
Correct. Up to 16-bit compress, and I'll get into that when we get into news. Okay, the second thing that happens after you've run your UUC ICO is you run UUXQT, which is the execute program. What this does is it takes the files that UUC ICO brought in and decides what to do with them. And the two basic things that you do with them with my software is rmail or rnews. And UUXQT automatically calls them with the proper parameters based upon the information in the files. When the files are sent over, they're sent over with instructions to UUXQT of what to do with them. So for example, if the remote site wants to send mail to a user named Bill on your site, it would come over and tell UUXQT, run rmail on this file and send it to Bill. And it automatically does that. If you have a site downstream that you're calling and sending more stuff to, UUXQT can take that and queue it up to be transmitted via UUC ICO to the next one downstream. It's all automagical. News can come in compressed. UUXQT can recognize the compression and automatically decompress it. It can come in batched, meaning there's a number of news articles in a single file. It can recognize that. Basically, any way that a Unix box can put together news or mail for standard UUCP, it will understand. You don't need to concern yourself with the internals of it to make it work, although I highly recommend that you learn it because it's a fascinating bit of history, how the whole thing's put together. And the nutshell handbook will tell you that. This is very straightforward. It takes the files and puts them away. Any questions on this part? Okay, now that we've gotten the files over to the other side, and not necessarily put away yet, we have queue management programs. UUSnap, very simple, it gives you a snapshot of the queue. It will tell you how many files are waiting in a particular directory for a particular system. There can be any number of systems that you call. UUSnap will tell you how many jobs are actually waiting. There are three types of files. There are data files, command files, and execution files. And they behave differently depending on whether they're coming in or going out. When they're going out, you'll have one of each. The command file is what tells UUC ICO how to send the other two to the remote site. And the other two will get to the remote site, and then the command file will be deleted. Command file is basically instructions to UUC ICO what to do. On the other hand, the remote site will only send you a D and an X. And the X file is what tells UUXQT what to do with the data file. UUSnap will tell you how many data, execute, and command files you have waiting. It won't differentiate between incoming and outgoing at this. That's why it's simply a snapshot of the system. It's a good tool for checking and seeing if you have mismatches. If you have a lot more data files than you do command files, there have been some mismatches and you're going to need to clean out your spool. And I'll get to that. The second piece of queue management is UUQ. UUQ can be thought of as UUSnap, but a lot more detailed. It will tell you whether the job, it's for outgoing jobs only on the queue. It will show you all the outgoing jobs, what machine it's going to, what the command on the opposite side is going to be, either rmail or rnews, and who the mail is going to, if it's going to somebody, which of course it would be. How many bytes big the job is, when it was queued up, basic information that you need to make sure that your queue is being managed properly. It will also show you the sequence number of the particular job. Each job has a sequence number, which is a 5-character number, starting with a letter. Actually, I take that back. We moved up on the upgrade. It's now 7 to add greater flexibility. It's a letter, 4 numbers, and then 2 letters. The 4 numbers and 2 letters are generated completely randomly to ensure that no jobs collide. So that if you queue up one job and then you queue up another and they come up with the same name, it'll pick a new name. The letter is what's known as a grade, and that determines how important what is going out is. In the second release of 1.3, which we're looking to release in 4 weeks, perhaps 6, you will be able to specify what the highest grade you want to send is. So you can queue your mail up with grade, say, B, being the second highest, and queue up your news with grade N. And then you could say, when you call UUCICO, I want to send grade M or better in the middle of the day. And so you'd only send your mail. In the middle of the night, you can say, send grade Z or better. And that would send everything through. That way you can control what you want to send. In a future release, I'm working on a standard with a gentleman by the name of Ian Taylor, who's working on a product called Taylor UUCP, which is on the Unix side. It's going to support session limits, so you can say how many bytes you want to transfer back and forth at a maximum. And a bunch of other limits, what the largest file you'll accept is, and so on. These are being worked out right now. And will definitely be out before, say, the holiday season, certainly before the end of the year. If there are any questions, stop me. The ugly command, UULog, simply displays a log of everything that you've done to date, or until the last time you trimmed the size of the log file. It's messy, it's ugly, it's cryptic, but when you need to debug the system, it's your best friend. It's actually pretty straightforward to read. It's just there's a lot of information in there. It will tell you what ran, what time, why it started, which program started it, what happened when it ran. It will give you an okay or a failed or a queued or a requested. There are all kinds of different things that the log will tell you. Fairly self-explanatory. There are 2 filters on it. You can give it a dash S, which will limit it by system. So if you're feeding a number of systems and you're having problems with one, give it a dash S for that system you're having problems with. You'll only get the entries for that system. You can also give it a dash U, which traditionally in Unix specified the user that queued up the job. Since this is DOS and there is no idea of a user, what it will do is it will look for the file or the program that caused that log entry to be made. So if you're noticing on UUXQT, for some reason your jobs aren't being put away right, you can do a dash U UUXQT and it will give you all the entries for UUXQT. And then you can see if it's exiting with a specific error. And then final in queue management is UUClean, which will clean out the spool. You can tell it to clean out the spool on all files or just data, command, execute, or temporary files. The reason that you might have some of these lying around is, especially the easiest one, if power goes out while you're processing. There are certain critical sections that if the power was to go out, you might have a data file left over even after it had been processed. When processing is complete, then the files are deleted. So if after the processing is complete, but before the files are deleted, the power went out or the machine hung for some reason. Somebody's battery's low. It sounded like. You're the button maker. If the power went out at that point, you could have files left over. In certain bug situations, you might have temp files left over. that's actually more difficult to trace than you might think. We've implemented a new way of doing temp files in 1.3, where each temp file has its own specific code that our programmers know, so we can try to track down when temp files aren't deleted. The way the editors are set up such that you can bounce between editors and change things around, on occasion a temp file will be overlooked. There could be worse bugs than leaving temp files around. And then you specify a number of days old a file must be before it's deleted. So often I will just do a uuclean-o5, o meaning all files, delete them after they're 5 days old. Watch out with uuclean if the site that you're getting information from goes down for any extended period of time. You may still be queuing up jobs for it, waiting for it to come up, and if you, by habit, do a uuclean for a number of days that is less than the number of days your feed site has been down, you're going to kill jobs that should actually stay there. So watch out for that. Some people might put something in their autoexec.bat that does a uuclean-o5. If your site's been down for 6 days, you're going to be killing jobs you didn't want to. Now we get into the readers and the posters. And the first one is simply called mail. How many here have used mail on a Unix system? Looks, feels, and tastes almost the same. There are a few things that aren't there. There are a few things that are different. Just like standard bin mail, a question mark will give you all the options. The messages are sequential by when they were received. They can be marked as read, unread, new, preserved. Mail has a lot of options, and it would be kind of fruitless for me to go through each and every option in the mailer and describe the whole thing to you, especially when it's really self-explanatory. In the easiest scenario, you type mail, hit return, keep hitting return, you'll eventually read through all your mail. It uses the standard more pager, which means after a page is done, it'll give you a more prompt. A spacebar will give you another page, a return will give you another line. And then when you finish a piece of mail, it will get you back to the mail prompt. It has the standard features, R for reply, big R for reply to everybody that was on any mailing list, including carbon copies. You can include carbon copies. It has aliasing, just like standard Unix. Basically, I've tried to stay as close to standard Unix as I possibly could. There are some places... Did you have a question?
Sure.
Okay.
Is your mail compatible with the other DOS Unix mail?
If it is compatible with RFC 822, then yes.
I'm thinking of the file format. That's what you're saying.
The file format is RFC 822.
I meant the file format, where's the directory format?
All the mail is kept in your spool directory. Inside the spool directory is a file name with the name of the user, which is your mailbox. And inside of that file is a standard RFC 822 mailer. RFC 822 is the specification that's come up on the Usenet for specifying what mailboxes and mail messages need to look like. It specifies what headers are good, what headers are mandatory, what you can and cannot do in mail. It's a very simple specification. The mail is simply a text file. The way it's delimited is each message starts with a capital F, little R-O-M, space. That denotes the top of a mail message. The mailer has a filter such that if you send mail to somebody, or actually I take that back, if mail is received from somebody and it has a capital F, little R-O-M space inside of the body of the message, it will put a greater than sign in front of it so as not to confuse the mailer. Some mailers out there use control A's for pacing. Some require that you have an extra blank line, which is not in the specification. Rather than attempt to be compatible with everybody and break the specification on some other people, I just meet the RFC 822 specification, and if it's not compatible with someone else, there's nothing I can do.
Do you know if you use the same redirectories?
I don't know what directories they use, so I couldn't tell you. The specification on the UCP directories is a spec that Tim Pozar and I came up with last year. We've published it. I know that UUPC, the guy who wrote UUPC, says that he will eventually move to it, and the guy who wrote Waffle, the response I got back was which is expected.
Is that a quote?
It's a quote out of context. That was the gist.
Okay.
Okay. Now we get into Usenet. And
can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is it possible in this environment using this kind of thing for mail to be threaded?
It is possible, but it hasn't been done yet on our side. We have not written a threaded mail reader.
Nobody.
Does anybody know of anybody who's written one? I don't. A threaded mail reader on DOS?
No, on DOS.
Whether it's on DOS or Unix or, you know.
On Unix, sure. Yeah, there's Elm on Unix. Elm will do threading, sure. My roommate does it all the time. Of course, he's a weenie, but I use Mailex. Yeah. Some offline mail readers will read
822?
Will
read.
Oh, will. Okay.
Like
subject tracing.
Chronological, no, the dialogue back and forth. You said to me in this message, I replied to you, he then came in and talked to both of us.
In mail? So you're saying that all three of us were in a particular message thread. I sent mail to both of you two.
Yeah.
You sent mail to both of us two. It'll do that. I don't understand why you would call that threading. I call that multiple recipients.
Well, we're looking at it. It's both. The situation that coming from a world other than Unix, where dialogues either in a total discussion like in a conference can get threaded, where we all participate, all right?
Huh?
And if you just get this stuff in chronological order, and you ask me something 3 days later, I guess this is the reason why the Unix people go nuts with quoting everything that I said before.
You want to be able to go back and look at the message.
Yes.
So that I didn't have to quote you.
Yes.
Well, it saves the messages in chronological order. It appends new messages to the end. Comment?
I'm not sure if the gentleman realizes the volume of Usenet mail that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Usenet, if you took every message off of Usenet that you were interested in...
Well, he's talking personal mail, not news groups.
Oh, okay.
He's not talking news.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Threading news is a different thing.
Okay, is that going to be something you're going to address, threading the news?
Threading news is going to be addressed. The current news reader doesn't thread like you think, but with what you're saying, threading, it doesn't do it all, because news is single user posting anyway, and public. But as for multiple recipients in mail, you can do that. You can even set up a mailing list where you would say in your system's alias file, alias list to be, you know, Bill, Ted, Fred. And then when you say mail list, it would mail to those three people. It'll do that if that's what you're talking about.
That wasn't, but I understand what you've said about that.
Okay. To get into Usenet, setting up Usenet is simple, really, a lot more than a lot of people think. Once you have your link established, all you need to do is say to the remote system administrator, I want these groups. You specify which groups you want. How do you find out what groups there are? You ask him. He will probably send you via mail, assuming you have your mail link set up already, or he might give you a printout of all the news groups. And then you'll just pick which ones you want, and he's responsible for feeding them to you. There's two things you need to do once you've decided what groups you want. The first one is create an active list. And I've made it really simple to do that. All you need to do to create an active list is ask the remote administrator for the active file entries of all the news groups that you've asked for. And what you would do then is you would put it in the proper place, which would be in your lib directory /news/active. And then you would run this program, ActMake. What ActMake does is it goes through your active file, takes out each news group, and will create the proper directory for it in the news hierarchy. For example, if you have this really awful group, Rec Humor Funny, terrible group. He's the moderator. It would create in the news directory rec/humor/funny, and that's where all the articles would go. There's some file munging that goes on, mainly because DOS doesn't like certain characters. Comp lang C++ becomes comp lang C___. Comp sys AUX becomes comp sys_AUX. You can't have a directory named AUX because that's a DOS device driver. All of the DOS device drivers and reserved characters that you can't have as directories will be renamed. At this point, there is no news group that does not meet an 8-character uniqueness. Because DOS has an 8-character limit on a directory name, sans extension. There are no news groups that would collide because of this. I doubt there ever will be. Famous last words. I doubt there ever will be. If there is, I will address it.
What comes out of the closed sieve?
The what? Yeah, it would be protocol, which is unique to 8 characters. Is that? Right, so you have the first directory is comp, second directory is protocol, and then you have a directory inside of there for all the different news groups in there. Right, so each point is within 8 characters. Yes?
Did I understand you say that to set up the list of groups you want to read takes a manual intervention on the Unix side? So why is that needed?
Historically, you have to decide what you're going to feed to somebody. There's a file called the sys file, which I'll be talking about next, that specifies which news groups you feed to your remote sites.
Yeah, but it's all in a specific directory, some of those subdirectories, and you just go and get what's moving.
No, that's not how the protocol works. What happens on the Unix side is the Unix administrator, and actually it happens on this side too, you specify which groups you want to send to the remote site, and that's it. What happens later is as news is posted to those directories, an entry is made in a file which contains the file names of all those new posts. Later on, you run a program called Batcher, which goes and picks out those articles, puts them together in a file, and queues them up to go.
I'm just a little bit disturbed by this manual intervention, because every time I want to ask them, I have to go ask them.
That's correct.
Why can't the software just take a look? Be told where the system files are on that site.
If you can come up with a decent protocol for doing that, I'd be happy to pass it through as an RFC. There is something. Dynafeed. Well, Dynafeed will do it. I haven't implemented it yet. Okay, if they go through, I'm there. If the Unix side universally adapts them, and an extension to RFC 1036, which is the standard for Usenet messages, if that goes through, then they will slowly start to accept that. I will make that too. But at this point, there'd be nothing I could do. The Unix side would look at whatever I tried to send and go, huh? Wouldn't know what to do. I could implement Dynafeed, but I'm not keen on the way it works.
Doesn't it take the agreement on both sides to send back and forth? So if you ask your feed to, well, just give me everything I think I might want, and then it's up to you to maintain the list of what you're actually going to take.
Yeah, the question was, doesn't it take cooperation on both sides? And the answer is yes. If you say to him, send me everything I might want, you don't know what he's going to send you. You have to have your remote site tell you what he's going to send you so that you can create the proper directories to put the stuff away and be able to gather it later.
What happens to something he sends you? Let's suppose I ask for all that rack.funny or all that rack.funny or something. And I got about something else.
That you didn't want?
Yeah, it just shows up what you're putting.
It'll drop it on the floor. I specifically did not implement junk because under DOS you would fill up the file system. You'd fill up the junk directory in a hurry. I specifically drop it on the floor and log it as such. So you can go through the logs later and see, you know, unrequested news group and know, gee, you know, I better talk to my feed because he's feeding me garbage I don't want. For example, if you say to your feed, I want Rec Humor, he'll put in his site, in his sys file, Rec Humor. You're going to get Rec Humor Funny. You're going to get Rec Humor D. You're going to get Rec Humor Oracle. You're going to get all the Rec Humors. The way the hierarchy works, if you specify a higher up, you're going to get everything below it. A global news feed to a sys file often looks like alt, comma, comp, comma, rec, and that's it, because it will feed everything inside of there. So you need to fine-tune your feed. It's nice to know that if you're getting a Usenet feed from somebody, they know what they're doing. I often say you can't install Usenet by accident. If you're getting a feed from somebody, they know what they're doing, and they should be able to help you with any problems that you run into in this arena. So after you create your active file with the groups that he gives you, you run ActMake and it will create the directories for you. When you add new news groups to your active file, just rerun ActMake. It'll see that the other directories are already there and pass over them and then create the new ones that need to be created. Once you do that, you absolutely positively need to run FixActive. FixActive then turns around and does basically the opposite thing. It goes through the hierarchy, sees what your highest and lowest articles are, and sets up the active file appropriately. The active entries that you're going to get from the remote site are going to have his highest and lowest, which have nothing to do with yours. Message number 42 on his side, if it's the first one he feeds you, will become message number 1 on your side. There is no correlation between the two. So when you get on Usenet, don't say, in the fifth message in this news group, someone said this, because that's the fifth message on your site. It might be the 5 millionth on someone else's, not 5 million, but might be the 50,000th on someone else's site. How many posts from IQ were funny? You know?
I don't count.
You don't keep track?
I have 267,000 posts in my control.
It can get a lot.
I'm kind of curious, is that true about Unix sites also? That site is just a little different?
Yes. The messages are the same. The message IDs, the message identifications are the same, which are generated uniquely at the site that's posting it. But the actual number, the series in which it came in, is different between each machine.
And then is there a maximum number to reset to 0?
Long int. If we ever hit it, I pity the world. If anybody here thinks we're going to hit long int, I've got a bridge to sell you. Do you think we'll ever hit long int in any given news group?
Well, no.
Okay.
That's 2 billion. There's 4 billion people in the world, so I can't really focus on something.
If we ever hit long int, I'll buy you dinner in Paris. And if we die before that, you buy me dinner someplace else.
If I can reach you.
We'll probably both be in the same place. Batcher is what you run before you call UUCICO to send the information to the remote site. What Batcher will do is it will create the actual execution command and data files for sending news to the remote site. There's a file in lib/news which is called batcher.cfg, which controls how Batcher works. Options for the Batcher are whether or not you want to compress it, which uses the standard Unix compress all the way up to full 16-bit. Actually, that's your real big decision. You can tell it how big the maximum batch size should be, how many batches you can have pending at any given time. For example, on my feed, I tell it maximum batch size of 40K, and this is before compression, so it comes out to about 23, 24K afterwards. Maximum batch size of 40K, maximum of 10 batches pending. Batcher will call UUQ with a special parameter before it runs and see how many batches are waiting. And if you've got a whole bunch backed up, it won't create any new ones. But then again, you could always go and tell it, well, give me 20, and then you'll get 20 batches. Batcher will normally run pretty silently and not show you much. It's not paranoid software, unless you give it -v for verbose, in which case you'll get tons of stuff. And you'll see it choosing its sequence numbers, and it will tell you exactly what it's doing. And that's what batches up your outgoing news. The incoming news is automatically unbatched by our news. And anything that you post locally gets posted immediately so that you can read it. The way the Batcher works is when you post a message locally, it adds the file name of that Usenet message to a file inside of news/outgoing named after the remote site. And it just has all those file names. Then when Batcher runs, it just goes and gets the file names one by one and adds it to the batch. What's next? Okay. The way that Batcher knows how to decide what to batch for whom is via a file called sys, which is also in Live News. The sys file contains a list of all the news groups that you want to send to the remote site. Whereas the active file contains the list of all the news groups you have, sys file can be a subset of that. So you might want to get certain groups from your remote site, but not send anything that's posted locally back. That can be done. Yes?
How does if somebody's feeding me, and I want to feed somebody farther down the line, and then it's all got to feed back in.
Yeah, how do you keep
about sort of like finally use a seam by?
How do you keep from refeeding? Okay, it's very simple. FSUCP is designed to be what I call, at least, I don't know if that's the name, but it's called a simple branch. You are going to get fed by one primary site. You are going to feed any number of sites from zero to however many. When new news comes in, it's going to be put locally, and then it's going to query the sys file to see, is there anybody else that I feed that might want this article, except for the guy I got it from. And then it will queue it up for transmission to everybody except the guy you got it from. Assuming that anybody that you feed doesn't, through any roundabout method, eventually feed back to any of the other guys, you'll never have a problem. Anything else requires a history mechanism to remember what came through and what you sent. And under DOS, you're going to trash your disk because the file gets huge. You have a funny look on your face. You ever seen the size of a history file?
No, you have no history file.
No, I don't maintain...
But you have Pathline.
Sure.
Pathline is normally what's used to stop news from going out where it came from.
Really? Because I usually watched history.
Yeah. Well, it's not true. We're going into obscure stuff. But anyway, what you want to tell him is, yes, it works, and what I'll tell you later is how to make it work better.
Okay. Well, I love user input. You're not even a user. Well, at least not in my software. Expire will expire old Usenet messages in your hierarchy. If you never run this, you're going to fill your disk. The more news groups you get, the faster your disk will fill. The longer you let them sit around, the faster your disk will fill. What are we running right now? 27 megs a day on a standard full feed? It's about 27.
40 or something.
No, that's a big feed. A standard mainline hierarchy feed. Not counting BioNet, not counting DE, sub, and all those other garbages.
I don't count bytes anymore, but it's
lots of bytes. Lots. There's lots. Anybody who uses my software to get more than 10 megs a day, go buy a Unix box. Because you're on DOS, and you're going to fill your file system. I assume that most of you know what happens when you get more than 300 or 400 files in a directory under DOS. It goes zzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzz go and it will delete articles that have reached a certain age, which is controlled in a file called XBLIST, which looks just like its Unix counterpart, if you've ever used the Unix XBLIST. You can define, based on newsgroup, how long to keep it, and what to do with it when you're done, simply to delete it or to copy it into a different directory for archival purposes. For example, if you really like the jokes in Rec Humor Funny, you're sick, but you can archive them to a directory called jokes. And then through the course of your life, you'd have all these jokes. Or you could just delete them.
That's the course of your life, I suggest you get.
Yeah, look who's talking. Post news does just what it says. Posts news. You type, you're shaking your head, no.
It is called exactly the way it's called.
Okay. You type post news. It will ask you what news group do you want to post to. You tell it. It will ask you, is this a reply to a previous message? You tell it yes or no. If you tell it yes, it will ask you what message. You can give it a question mark and it will list all the subjects so you can pick one. It will then suggest to you a default distribution, meaning how far and wide is it going to go. And distributions are funny because some people don't implement them, at least not properly. And then it will throw you into the editor and let you edit your message. You edit your message, you say you're done, it posts the message. It asks you send or abort or go back and re-edit. There are two editors in FSUCP. One I provide, one you can provide. There's a line editor, which is a standard line-by-line editor. You can't back up past the previous line. There are certain tilde escapes for affecting the editor. And you can also have a visual editor of your choice. The only restriction is that the visual editor must accept the name of the file to be edited on the command line, so like VI, and then the name of the file. And the name of the file that you give it must be the same one that it returns back to you when it's done. So if it creates a temp file somewhere, it needs to copy it back into the original. just about every editor does that. Don't use Word Perfect, don't use Word or anything, because they're not true ASCII editors. They will throw in all kinds of garbage, and people on the Usenet will mail bomb you and flame you or worse. I used to have an internal editor. It caused so many headaches, I got rid of it. If anybody used an old version and wants to know where the internal one went, the answer was back for a refund. And I might put in a new one in the future if I can find one that doesn't scribble all over memory and crash everything. Read News is a somewhat shameless re-implementation of RN by Larry Wall. Set thereof, it also has a few niceties to make it work under DOS. Unlike most of the other programs where a question mark will get you help, in Read News an H will get you help. Because that's the way they did it on Unix, so that's the way I did it. The only thing that I really admit it needs and it doesn't have is subject threading, and that is in the works. That's where you can read a subject and say, I want to read the next message in this news group with this subject, and it will jump to the next one and then take you back to the beginning again when you finish that particular thread. Read News is pretty self-explanatory. If you don't know what to do, you hit H. Spacebar in Read News is your default do what it thinks you should do key. When it starts up, it'll say, here's all the news groups with unread news. It'll put you in the first one. It'll say, N unread articles. Would you like to read them now? The default is yes. And you'll go through them one at a time. If you kept hitting spacebar, you'd eventually read everything and exit. At any time, if you don't know what to do, you can hit H for help. And like mail, going into each and every feature would be kind of fruitless. It's all in the documentation, and it's all inside of the program. Does anybody have any specific questions about the news system? Can't be that easy to understand.
Is it compressed on the hard disk?
It's not compressed on the hard disk. The news is stored as a single file for each article in the directory on the hard drive. There's no compression like that. If you run Stacker or something, Stacker will love it because it's text, and that'll crunch it down nicely. Yes, it does 12, 14, and 16-bit compression. On the incoming news, it can automatically detect the compression rate and do it for you automatically. On the outgoing in the batcher.cfg, you specify at what rate you want to compress. The difference between 12 and 16, I've not found to be significant, and 12 is significantly faster.
You've just thrown about 14 dozen different programs at us. To me, it sounds like I have to spend the rest of my life configuring this to get it to run.
A configuration. You're not a plant, no. Configuration is a lot simpler than you would think, and it gets simpler with every release because it's the one thing that I get yelled at the most for. When you first get the package, it's in one big 1.03 meg zip file. You unzip it into a scratch directory. You then get a bunch of other zip files, exe.zip, libucp.zip, libnews.zip, man.zip, and then you get an install.man and an install.exe. Read the install.man. It tells you what you need to do and in what order to set the package up, and then run install. It's a nice TurboVision windowed interface that asks you a bunch of questions on a data entry screen. What's your node name? What's your name? What's your full name? What's your domain name? What port are you going to have the modem on? What speed? Do you want to use the internal driver?
Bush or Clinton?
Huh? Yeah, Bush or Clinton, sure. Bill and Opus. If you can vote, are you an American yet? I don't know if you guys can read this or not. Aside from the logo at the bottom, this is what a typical configuration file looks like. The installer creates this for you. Everything that is mandatory in here will be done by the installer for you. I can't reach that high. Basically, what you get is your system name and your log name. The system name is your full domainized name. Log name is the actual name of your machine. You give it your username and the full name so that it can create properly for the messages, and then a smart host. What the smart host is that is the path to probably your Unix host, if you're feeding from one. If you're feeding from somebody who feeds from a Unix host, you'd give the path to the Unix host through them. And who here was not at the introduction to internet this morning? Okay, so you guys all understand bang paths. You guys understand bang paths. If your Unix host was foo, and you're feeding from bar, which is, say, another FSU UCP, for smart host, you would put bar bang foo. And that gives a path to the smart host. If the mailer gets an address that it can't understand, and it doesn't recognize as a blatantly screwed up address, it will forward it to the smart host, hoping it can understand it. If the smart host can't, it will send you back an error message in mail, saying, you know, return for what some reason. In the directory information, you give it the paths to the directories where things are going to be kept. You create a home directory under which you put directories for each user, where their news reading configuration, their signature, and say dead letters, if any are created, are put. A spool directory, which I highly recommend you have enough space on, and it's a relatively fast disk. Don't put your spool directory on a floppy. If you've got an electronic disk and you've got at least 3 or 4 megs on there, that's wonderful. Not a RAM disk, though, because if the power goes out, you're hosed. Libdir is where the library files are kept. Pubdir is not currently implemented, but there's a space keeper because it will be in the future. So I wanted to reserve that word. Where your news is, and an actual file where you're going to put your log file. Is there a question? Yeah. Do I configure what?
That user's spool mail.
Yeah, well, you give it the spool directory, and it will automatically create a mail directory underneath that. The spool directory is just the base spool directory. Where do you want your spool to be?
Someone else can use user mail and put the user spool mail.
Oh, fine. I haven't had anybody complain yet, but if that's a valid I wish, then I can add it to the things to do. Nobody has complained about that yet, but there's a first for everything. And then RAM disk, which you can put a single character, meaning the drive where you have a RAM disk. If you have a RAM disk, it will use the RAM disk for your temporary files. Considerably speeds things up during the processing. Anything beginning with a sharp sign are comments. Some people call it a pound sign. And then you can give it communications information. Driver can either be internal or fossil. You get to pick which one you want. Modem is a file name to a modem configuration file, which will contain in it currently two verbs, one being port speed, which is the maximum port speed for the modem, and then any number of init strings to initialize the modem. In 1.3, I only included haze.mdm. I'm currently compiling a list of as many modems and initializations for UUCP as I can. And in release 2, those will all be in their own directory. If anybody has any good initialization strings for UUCP, I'd like to have a copy and disseminate that amongst everybody. You specify a port, and then you specify 3 levels of timeouts. In seconds, timeout to wait for carrier after dialing, timeout to wait for the prompt that you're looking for during the login sequence, and then the timeout while exchanging data. And you can see that those progressively get lower as the tolerance for a timeout would decrease. And then feature information, you can specify line or visual for the editor. You specify where your visual editor is. Even if you specify line, a tilde V can get you to your visual editor. So you should specify a file. Autosig determines whether or not your signature is automatically appended to your outgoing mail. It is always automatically appended to your news, your Usenet postings. And then your organization, which is a header added to your Usenet postings. And even though this didn't turn out as well as I would hope, proof that it runs in DOS compatibility boxes on Windows. I guess I could have faked it, but I didn't. This is what it looks like on my system. I made some PIFs. Unfortunately, I can't include the icons because I bought the icons, and I'm not allowed to redistribute them. And unfortunately, the expire icon didn't turn out too well. That's a green toxic waste barrel that's on fire, which is how I sometimes feel before I run expire, wanting to get rid of that stuff. And then the big question, availability. FSCCP is shareware. Try it before you use it. It's available on most of the large MS-DOS FTP sites if you're already on the internet. Simtel 20, WArchive, Oak.Oakland, they're all there. I can't tell you which BBSs it's on, only because that would almost be a full-time job, keeping track of which BBSs it's on. I wish I could keep track and help people out. I can't. Also, it's on CSN. We need to find a new place to put it because it's in that EdgeNet directory. It's in EdgeNet. The Beta 5 is in EdgeNet. I need to put Release 1 in there. Absolute worst case, if you can't find any place else to get it, there's two things you can do. Actually, three things. If you want a registered copy, I'm knocking $5 off for anybody who wants to register it here at the conference, so it would only be 30. I made a limited number of disks. I think I've got about 10 left. If you have a high-density 3.5-inch floppy, find me sometime, and I've got the zip file on the laptop, and I can give you a copy, and take it home, try it out. If you like it, then you can register it. Or if you send a self-addressed, stamped, not metered, but stamped, disk mailer to me with a formatted high-density floppy, I will put a copy on it and send it back. If we're within 2 weeks of anticipated 2 weeks, within from a new release, I will hold the floppy mailer until the new release unless you explicitly ask me not to and ask me to send you the latest release. Now what I'd like to briefly show you is something that we're working on right now for availability in the fourth quarter, which is called UU Plus, which is the commercial... Oh, question?
Did you give us your address?
Yeah, when we're all done, I'll give you the address. This is a commercial version of UUCP and news that we're working on based upon the FSUUCP engine. When I recommended that you get O'Reilly & Associates' book, you'll need that if you want to configure the shareware and understand what you're doing. I like to think that the commercial understands the book itself. Then here's an overview. You basically get everything, mail, Usenet news. It includes file transfer, integrated mail and news readers so that you can cut and paste between the two. It's a full windowing environment with a text windowing user interface, dynamic menus, mouse support, multiple mailboxes open at the same time. You can have multiple windows. You can shrink them down, blow them up, move them around. If any of you are familiar with TurboVision, that's what we're developing this in. It's got a spelling checker built in to any editors that you might use, and it'll run on any 286 or above. The file transfer is not FTP, though FTP is on the list of things to add compatibility with. File transfer right now it's the standard UUCP file transfer capability. Plus, when one UU Plus talks to another, they'll switch into Z modem. Also, within the next couple weeks, hopefully, it will be speaking Z modem to Taylor UUCP, which is the UUCP replacement. Possible applications for this, you can connect PCs to the existing Unix networks, and don't tell NSFNet I said that. Standalone enterprise UCP networks without Unix, set up an enterprise-wide network keeping with an open standard, which leaves you room to connect to the internet later on if you wanted to do that. With the Z modem, the communications are very economical. It really jets. It goes faster than even I thought it would. And unfortunately, I'm not allowed to tell you how fast, but it's really fast. And then possible entities that might want to use this. We're currently consulting with a number of schools and public entities who are setting up enterprise-wide nets using UU+. Features, full UCP Internet Usenet compatibility with the windowing mail and threaded news reading. It has a smart mailer. In our Node software, it actually has more capability than SendMail without the headaches of having to learn how to edit a SendMail CF. If any of you have ever had to edit a SendMail CF, knowing nods, yeah, some of that. This is all, it's pretty much taken care of for you. It's not graphical based, but it's object based. You don't need to worry about all the stupid rule sets, what goes first. You set it up in a more logical way. It'll run B and C news, 12, 14, 16-bit compress. Z modem, if the site it's talking to will speak Z modem, which Taylor will, and of course talking to itself. And the internet news groups can be set up in DBase format, which increases the processing like you wouldn't believe. Running UUXQT on large news batches does take some time. It has to process them, decide what to do with it. Under the DBase setup, it runs quickly, very quickly. I'll get to that. That's at the end. The versions and features. We basically have three versions. UU Plus Lite, which is basically client software. It does not have call-in capability. It's just call-out. The full windowing interface, individual mail and news readers. It's basically an email news terminal emulator. What it really is it's FSUCP for someone who doesn't want to buy the book and doesn't want to have to understand what to do. It does everything for you. It's smart enough to understand when there's an error and correct it. That's basically what it is. It's very intelligent. The Leaf has a scheduler built in, which is similar to Unix cron. In fact, it can read a Unix cron tab file straight over from the Unix side. It has automatic send and receive. It can answer calls and place calls. It can be talking on the modem while UUXQT is running. It can be batching and expiring and talking on the modem and putting news away all at the same time. It's a completely event-driven program. They put integrated mail and news readers on there, and I've been fighting against it only because when we integrate it, the file size gets really huge. I'm pushing not to have the integration on the Leaf, but on the next higher-up version, so don't take that as verbatim. The way it's set up with the Asher capability, it can accept anonymous incoming calls and basically be set up as an email fax equivalent. Instead of getting something in and printing it out on paper, you can send mail to somebody on that site and be anonymous. Of course, you're going to want to tell them who you are, but just like any fax machine can call any other fax machine, any UU Plus can call any other UU Plus and transfer mail. And then, sure, why not?
Same abuse as you get it back.
Exactly. You can get junk mail with this, and I wish there was a way I could make it not so, but...
Is there a way to ban specific people? Put in virus insertion codes, and the person calls you, and you don't like them, it automatically loads the virus into their machine.
You heard it here first. and the highest version, UU Plus Node, which has automatic mail and news forwarding and distribution, meaning you can set up an enterprise-wide net with the node and it will handle everything. That's basically its send mail capability, plus all the other things that send mail can do. Has a smart mailer and router. It can read a PATS database if you wish to create one. There are some new verbs that I've introduced into setting up pathing for smart routing dependent upon domain or UUCP, how you want to get it to it. It's equivalent to a single user Unix UUCP system. If you had a Unix box running UUCP with all the things that it does the equivalent under DOS plus more. You could actually build an enterprise-wide network with this, and we have. Compatibility, RFC 822 and 1036. Compatible with the Berkeley BSD System VBNU. 1, 3, and 7 window G. If this doesn't make any sense to you, it really doesn't matter. These are basically all of the ways to do UUCP. B and C news, 12, 14, 16-bit compression, and the standard file formats, except where they conflict with DOS, and then we have a standard for translating them. And now, I hope some of you are going to be pleasantly surprised at that. Prices are, I think they're very reasonable. Huh? I'm sorry. Well, list price is what you list it as, and expected retail is what like Programmer's Paradise sells it for when you sell them 10,000 copies in bulk. Street price, yeah. Expected retail is street price. Although the marketing squid doesn't like me to use this particular phrase. I kind of like it. We hope to have this out in time for you to give thanks for it at Thanksgiving. If we flip, it'll be a Christmas present, but then I'm the Christmas goose since I'm the programmer. And if you'd like more information, that's where you can write, call, fax, or whatnot. I have business cards if you'd like a card. That's not the address to send for a copy of FSU UCP. Does anybody want me to tell you that address? Does anybody need it? Huh? Is that here? Yeah, it is in the program. The address is in there. Are there any questions?
Are you in Camarillo?
Yeah. Hang on a second. We have two offices. One is in Camarillo, the other is in San Luis Obispo. I'm in San Luis Obispo, which is why there's a different address. Oh, yeah, also, I'm very pleased, actually, with this conference. Thank you, Jack. I went around to most of the BBS manufacturers and asked them if it was possible that I could get a technical specification and a copy of their board for possible standardization in Gateway. Last night we had a developers meeting to form a standards group, and I was very surprised at how well it went, and then I got shanghaied into being the secretary of it. And we're going to be setting up some standards for graphics communication, mail, and messaging standards, and just about anything else that we can come up with to set a standard for interoperability. I went around to the BBS manufacturers and said, I'd like copies so that I can get to work on making sure that all the messaging is standard, and also so that it's internet Usenet compatible, so that gateways can follow a specific standard. And I'm pleased to announce that I got unanimous support. Every single one that I talked to said, sure, no problem, and either gave it to me right there on the spot or took my address and is going to be sending it to me and said, if you need help or more specifications, give me a call. So hopefully this will all be standardized on all the BBSs and running gateways. Jack has written a program called PIMP, love that name, that will gate mail brought in with FSCUCP into TBBS and back out the other way. It's completely seamless. The two lines just look like internet mail lines, correct? So it's a seamless gateway. If you're interested in that... Huh? What if they're longer than 25? What limit is that? Are there? Jack?
Yeah, let me talk about it a little bit. Chris's program does, I think, the best job of filling its ISO function.
So you want a microphone? You grab that mic right there.
Hello? Yeah, Chris's program, I looked at several of the UKICO programs that were out there. This is the mailer used to contact a Unix host for a UCP program. I like the way he did a couple of things. There are a couple of issues that he didn't talk a whole lot about. Unix file names, DOS file names are completely different. He did a real good job of bringing Unix files into a DOS machine. When UKICO gets done, the files are there in an incoming directory, I think of it as. And what PIMP does is pick those up and put them in a TBBS message base. And there are some limitations a couple of ways, and one of them is its field length. We don't overcome the TBBS field length. What we do, that length is basically 64 bytes or 128 bytes, and actually we can apportion it a little bit differently than TBBS. I think an incoming message, the address, we can go 40 bytes. I did have one from Sprint come in at a 63-byte return address that caused some problems, but I think we've got it turned around. In the past, the gateways, you've had to pretend like you were sending to another system, put the internet mail address in the message, a lot of things that are very awkward for callers to the bulletin board system. All PIMP does is import and export files that look exactly like the ones Chris creates or receives, So UKiCo can send and receive them and interfaces it to this database on the TBBS system. To is to, and from is from, and R for reply. It works just like a regular TBBS message base. There are some other limits. The messages that come in can't be above 30K and display because of some other programs. Anything over 30K, we attach to the messages a file attach, which is something that TBBS does. So you can receive large messages, but they won't all be displayed. But basically, it's a gateway between a very proprietary message database in TBBS and a directory that he sets up for incoming and outbound mail. It uses the files in exactly the format FSUCP needs going out and takes the files FSUCP writes to the disk coming in and interfaces the TBBS system.
You might consider PIMP as being a UUXQT replacement. When it comes in, instead of running my UUXQT to put them away for personal use, it puts them away into BBS for BBS use.
As a matter of fact, in our office, we do both. So if I get an incoming internet mail message, it shows up on the office LAN under the FSUCP mailer, and it's also bounced into the message database for the bulletin board system. And all our callers can then be, you know, joe.williams@boardwatch.com, and my mail's in two places, both on the board and on the LAN. So it's worked out pretty good. It doesn't do Usenet news groups. It's strictly personal internet mail processor for TBBS. We wrote it so our system could do it. There's been some interest in it, and until something better comes along, I'll try to take care of who needs to be taken care of.
If Jack decides to write a Usenet gateway for it, then I guess he'll do it. If you don't want to, then I will plan on doing that.
Okay.
One way or another, it's going to get done. But since he's basically started the gateway on TBBS, I'll give you first right of refusal to write the gateway.
Okay.
For news.
I'm curious about the MHS, the live accounts you'll be supporting. Do you know if there's any way to take those two?
Oh, yeah, well, I think so. Novell has got several packages that can do any number of things from primarily in TCP/IP to do an IP connect to the internet. If he gets his mail into and out of MHS, I don't think you'll have any problem other than the price of these modules in their NetWare loadable modules for global email. They're $6,000 a piece, I think. But other than that, it'll work fine.
Any other questions?
Any chance you consider coordinating hours?
Yes, there is a chance, and I can't say much more than that. But there is a chance. I'll tell you everything that I can tell you that I would anticipate you'd ask. Version 1.4 is looking like it will support SLIP. It will do NNTP, SNTP, and BSNTP. Ports to Windows and OS 2 are being looked at, but no firm commitments. Oh gosh, what else? I can't think of anything else you'd ask. Did you have a question?
Yeah, Wildcat.
Wildcat, they said okay.
So you will be creating something to...
I will give no deadlines and no even guesstimates because I wouldn't even have the stuff yet. I don't know how they work. It could turn out to be a weekend hack for some of these bulletin boards. It could turn out, like for the major BBS, to be very difficult. We will see. There's already been one person who's expressed interest in doing the major BBS gateway, and I told him, you know, if you're the first one to do it and you do it right, I'll give you my rubber stamp of approval, and we can bundle the whole thing. My only, it's not even a requirement, it's basically a strong request, is that if anybody writes a BBS gateway for hobby use, I'd like it to be shareware. I can't enforce that. BBS is, the hobby BBS is, I'm going to get in trouble for this, but single line boards like Searchlight and I don't know if Wildcat's multi-line, you have to put it under Desk View, I think. The single line...
Wildcat's definitely multi-line.
Okay. The single line boards that, you know, a high schooler might have, I would really like to have shareware gateways so that they can get on the net. The business BBSs, I don't see anything wrong with making it a commercial gateway and you know, making a few bucks off it for businesses who use it. But I'd like to get the little kids on the net. You're grinning. I think I know what you're thinking. Any other questions? I have no idea. What it will be is it will be support for the public domain Clarkson packet drivers. And then it'll run the standard SLIP protocol, definitely with BootP, since anybody would use this would probably be running some sort of BootP protocol. And then just run mail and news transfer. One of the difficulties that I'm trying to overcome, I don't know if you're familiar on the Unix side, if you're running BootP or dynamic IP, adding a line to the NNTP access file to allow NNTP, you have to globally allow that IP because there's no way to do a reverse name lookup that I've found, which is a big security risk, allowing anybody to post who dials into that SLIP line. If anybody knows what I'm talking about and has a solution, I'd really like to hear it. You have a solution?
There is a solution, I believe, that you can go into SLIP after going through logging.
I'd like to know how to do that. We should talk. Okay. Anything else? I have a question. I'm kidding. I always wanted to do that. Okay. Thank you.